Now, this week, jockey David Mullins announced that he was hanging up the saddle at the age of 24. David had some brilliant days, 211 winners in Ireland, 4 Grade 1 wins in 2018 alone. But perhaps the highlight of a great, albeit short, career came at Aintree when he was just 19.
The final fence, the last samurai in Vic's canvas. The last samurai, one of the favourites. Vic's canvas, one of the outsiders. And the oldest horse in the race, age 13, behind them, Rule the World. Surely only these three now. Onto the run in here. Still 2 furlongs to go. The last samurai. Rule the World. Vic's canvas. What an astonishing finish. Rule the World now on the outside. Takes up the running. The last samurai can do no more. Vic's canvas is a hero in third. But is Rule the World who rules the racing world and wins the national for Ireland for Miles Morris and David Mullins. What a story! In second place was the last samurai. Vic's canvas, what a...
That was back in 2016, David Mullins. What is it like listening to it now?
I've actually never heard that rendition of it before.
Really?
No. That one was a bit more animated than the ones I have heard before.
No, it was brilliant, actually. Because I'd forgotten just how dramatic it was, and listening there really, really captured it, didn't it?
I did, yeah. Yeah, it was probably the best one I've heard, to be honest.
So that was back in 2016. And given what you've said this week since you announced your retirement, looking back at a 19-year-old starting off in the Grand National like that, I wonder, did you feel like you had the racing world at your feet? Or given what you have said this week alone, what was going through your head then, or can you even remember?
Hopefully back then what I was hoping to do was probably nail down a bit of a job and, a horse that you could put your name on rather than a jockey that gets the call up when something else goes wrong for somebody else. You know, it's good to have that bit of security and know where you're going at the weekends. Never really got that, but I've still had a great career riding second strings and getting the call up.
You see, that's the thing. So many people, I often think, well, including myself, we assume that it's maybe the fear of injury or it's trying to cope with keeping your weight down. That might be something that would be difficult for a jockey to deal with. But from listening to you, it almost sounds like it's the normal job sort of things that are the biggest challenge.
Yeah, just trying to nail down a bit of security. That's what I always wanted out of the job. I never really got it. I got a few good opportunities too and never could hold on to them. But there's plenty of challenges. I think the fear of not being good enough is probably the biggest one. That's what drives you on the most. If you have a fear of getting injured or a fear of not being able to do the weight or struggling that way, racing probably wasn't for you then as well, you know.
No, that would make sense. Where did this fear of not being good enough come from? And was that at the very, very start?
No, I think every jockey has that. It's a very competitive sport. I ride out with some of my best friends in Willys. I go to work with them every day. You see each other every day. There's a competitive stride in every single one of them. And you don't want anyone that you have to sit in a weigh room with maybe 4 or 5 days of the week, 4 or 5 hours a day, thinking they're better than you or getting the better of you. So there's always a fear. It's a fear, but it's a good fear.
And it's funny, actually, listening to you and listening to other jockeys talk about it, you forget that you spend that much time together and you are great rivals, not just when you're on the horse or in the middle of the race itself, but even in terms of for what particular gigs you get.
Yeah, yeah, no. The lad that's sitting beside you is probably the lad that's going to jock you off if you are going to get jocked off, you know, so... you have to take things with a pinch of salt always in the weigh room. You know, it'd be a dangerous place if everyone didn't get on and took the competitive side to a more meaningful level.
Must be a strange dynamic though, is it?
Yeah, you're looking at lads that are getting the better of you or you've got the better of them. It's a funny sport, all right.
You did that great piece with the Racing Post and you spoke about feeling trapped into being a jockey when you finished school at the age of 16. And they were the words you used, being trapped into being a jockey. Is that because of the family you came from or in what way did you feel trapped?
No, well, sorry, I was actually talking to Ruby about this morning. He was getting on to me.
Were
when you
in
leave
trouble?
School, I decided to leave school. He made sure for me to mention that. I wasn't putting in the effort in school and, you know, I just became attached to horses through my father, through training and producing them. You know, when you're 16, you don't have much else to do because I made the decision to leave school. The obvious thing was to do was to ride horses.
Because a lot of people talk about it being their passion, and I know you do have a passion for horses and you do have a passion for the industry, but you often hear about jockeys talking about their passion for the sport, but it sounds like that's not really something that you ever particularly had, or is that wrong?
No, I always had a bit of passion. I always had a passion for the sport. You hear jockeys and you see plenty of videos on Facebook and Twitter of jockeys' kids, you know, baiting the back of the couches with racing TV on or RT Sport on in the background. I was never one of those kids. I was out with a hurdler. I was going away show jumping for the weekend. I lived, there was horses in the background. That was basically it. But as I said, it just became the natural thing for me to do, to ride a horse when I did leave school. And with my father being a trainer, my uncle being champion trainer, you know, that was the path that was going to go down.
I wonder, is that what led in many ways? Because one of the things you said and reminded me of, I think it was Andrew McNamara we had in here a good few years ago now, and he was talking about the same thing as you, about trying to get the rides, and that you might be given an offer to go to one end of the country one day or even one morning and then having to go the same day or the next day to the other end of the country, and you might only be getting one ride out of that, and it wasn't particularly lucrative, but you're still under pressure to take it.
Yeah, there's things like that. Like I went to Galway one year. I was there 6 days out of the seven. I didn't stay one night. You know, it's busy. And it probably didn't pay your diesel to be getting the one ride. Now, obviously, I had more rides on a few days or whatever, but there's jockeys that do it up and down the road every day. They're journeymen and hardworking men.
And you'd have fights with your agent over the fact that you just decide sometimes that you're not making the trip.
I often tried to get ways out of it, but I was always guilted back into riding.
One of the things you said as well was you referred to being called lazy if you didn't do it. And is this something that jockeys are under an awful lot of pressure? Because obviously it's also attached to the betting industry as well, and they go hand in hand as well. And is name calling and people being so overly critical of people within the industry, is that something that you become aware of very, very early on? And is it something that is always there?
Well, it's what I always felt. I always felt that if I didn't want to do that, I was considered lazy within the sport, not by anybody looking in. But if you weren't going to do that, somebody else, or there'd be five lads lining up behind you to do it. You know, it makes you look lazy. That's and you feel like it because everybody else does it in the sport. But, you know, there's five lads. I was one of them as well. Those lads are hungry, eager, and want to win. I was that lad at one stage myself, and I'm just not at the minute.
And what do you think is the difference between a jockey who, for some reason, does manage to get the regular jobs?
What do I think the difference
is? What is the difference? Because obviously there are lots of talented jockeys out there, and it must be very, very difficult to choose between you. So why do you think it is? Is it just luck, or why is it that some manage to get these regular gigs and others struggle for whatever reason?
Well, a lot of it now has to come down to work. I think the sport has definitely became a lot more professional than the stories you hear of 20, 30 years ago when a few of the older lads that have recently retired, they tell you some stories. And you could never really think it was a professional sport with the stories they tell you, going out on the biggest days and probably not getting to bed till all hours the night before. And, you know, it worked for some of them, and they were just better. They were good riders, and they always seemed to win. Now it's a sport where it's become more of an athlete sport, and there's no the hard workers are getting paid now.
And you obviously, as you mentioned, your dad is a trainer, your uncle is Willie Mullins, and you tended to trace mostly for him, but I know you've ridden for an awful lot of different trainers as well. But coming from a family like that, who is so steeped in racing tradition, what was that like, and what added pressures did that bring?
I never felt any pressure, to be honest. I was always confident in myself that when I was on the right horse, I was able to match any other rider's ability. That was never pressure never really got to me or anything like that.
So it wasn't that, because presumably you start off and you're a 19-year-old in your first ever Grand National at Aintree, and you come home and you pull off this huge shock win and you have this name Mullins there, and obviously there are going to be huge expectations, but by the sounds of things that was something that just kind of was like water off a duck's back, was it?
Racing's not like that. They don't, you know, I think 600 million people watched the Grand National. I don't know who was, my next ride was the following Friday in Ballinrobe. It was, I think he was 25 to 1. He pulled up, I don't at 8:30 at night. I don't think there was too many people watching that. You know, it's not, you're not competing at the same level the whole time. You know, you're only seeing the good days and the big days and wondering why you're tired off of that. You know, the Ballinrobe at 8:30 in a low grade handicap chase. There's not as much pressure on you when you're that price. So I remember my instructions that day were try and get the horse to run a race because he'd been in terrible form. So, you know, there was no real pressure. You just, it's a funny game. It's not like the next day you're going out and it's the same sort of mentality the whole time.
And yet you've been very open about the fact that you did get very down when the winners wouldn't come.
Yeah, like any jockey. Any jockey gets down when winners don't come. I used to go racing. Maybe I went racing Stevens's day. I think I rode four horses. One win, one fall, one favourite ran terrible, and I forget my other ride now. But you know, it didn't. Three rides didn't go to plan. The other one won. I still wasn't happy, and I'm sure a lot of jockeys are like that.
And would you be the sort of person who would analyse and reanalyse everything that you did?
You do to a point, and then you say it's done. I think I had five rides the next day, so. You kind of move on to the next day pretty quick.
Just back to working with your family again, because you worked with so many different trainers, and again, another thing you've been open about is the fact that different trainers speak very differently to jockeys about what way they want you to approach different races as well. You said that Willie doesn't say a huge amount, he doesn't give a huge amount of instruction, does he not? Because he trusts you with whatever is going to happen at the time when you're there in the thick of things.
Yeah. It's like Lester Piggott, I think, once said, a bad jockey, you shouldn't give any jockeys instructions because a bad jockey won't be able to carry them out, and a good jockey is going to do good enough anyway. So, Willie was very straightforward to ride for. I rode for a lot of decent trainers that were extremely good to ride for. Gordon Elliott was the trainer that got me going. He got me going on a few of the Jigginstown bumper horses when I was an amateur, and his instructions were tip around and see if you're good enough halfway up the straight. You know, that leaves a lot into a jockey's hands to fiddle around with.
But you did have trainers who would be quite detailed in their instructions as well, did you? And did you find that difficult?
Yeah, and you know, you get to know after riding for a while, you get to know what certain trainers like. You know what they're going to tell you before you even do it. But that's what you have to. That's what you have to do, and you have to get beat sometimes their way rather than try something that you might think might work. Yeah, if you're not 100% sure with it, you have to kind of get beat the way they want you to get beat as well.
Can that be infuriating?
It can, but that's the way it is. Ruby Walsh was the greatest rider of all time, to not even rider, but he juggled around so many jobs, and keeping trainers happy and owners happy, that was a big, big trait of his.
Sounds like there's a lot of politics involved.
Oh, very much so. You know, riding the horse, I always found, was the easiest part.
Do you feel that perhaps you should have got a lot more rides than you did?
No. As I said, I didn't have the hunger for it, and there was a lot more jockeys lined up behind me that would lose a limb just to try and get into the position that I was in. And no, I'm very grateful. This sport owes me nothing. I've had some amazing days out of it.
Now, you do say that, look, you've fallen out of love with being a jockey. You've no interest in being a jockey anymore, but you do want to stay within the horse racing industry, or at least the horse industry anyway.
Yeah, it's not how much press it's got. Maybe there's just not a lot going on. I don't know. But I still love racing. I'm always going to be a part of it for the rest of my life anyway. But I'm just not going to be getting the leg up in the parade ring anymore.
No, what I think it is, David, is I think the people have appreciated how honest you've been with how you've come out, and you've said how you genuinely feel and where you've had your difficulties, and that why it is that you don't want to be a jockey anymore. And I think that's why it's gotten so much traction, because people appreciate hearing you being so blunt about it.
Maybe you could call it blunt, yeah. I feel like if I didn't say everything that I said, I'd be sitting on the fence and leaving a door open for me to come back and ride. At the minute, I don't really have that interest. I've had a lot of phone calls to say don't rule it out completely, but I'm speaking as honestly as I can, yeah.
And it's brilliant to hear. But presumably there'd be other doors. You're not quite certain which doors you want to take, though, at the moment.
No, not really, because I plan to retire in Punchestown, but I had done that probably in November time, and the more I went on, I said that's not really fair to the horses, the trainers and the owners, because if it did go wrong or something really wasn't right, I could blame it on, I don't really care, I'm going to retire in Punchestown anyway, and that's not a fair thing to do.
Okay, well, David Mullins, it really has been so interesting talking to you, and we really appreciate you coming on with us.